Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good day, everybody. I'm going to welcome you to this week's edition of Here's to Your Health. I'm your co-host, Dr. Ron Epley, and with me as usual is...
your other co-host, Dr. Shane Goforth. Remember, this is a call-in show, so we'll encourage people to give us a call at 347-989-8722. So give us a call, and we'll try to get you on the air with us, because it'll be fun.
Yeah, I want to also welcome our listeners from KXCR 96.7, your Florence radio station. We are now part of that station, and we're happy to be part of it and happy to bring those listeners on as well.
That's right. Fun. That's going to be a great time.
Going to be good. So here we go,
yep.
Dr. G. Vaccinations, they're in the news. So here we go. It says a groundbreaking study confirms that a common vaccine additive is linked to autism-like behavior. Want to know what that is?
Okay.
Aluminum.
Is it dimerism? Oh, aluminum, yep. That would have been my next guess.
Yeah, no, it's aluminum. What they did is they, it was only a rat study, so it's not, you know, it's not like a human study. But they did rats, and what they did is they the study was done from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, and they compared rats that had aluminum, the equivalent of what you get in a vaccine, to those that didn't, and they noticed there were what they found was that rats exposed to aluminum in early life exhibited social symptoms similar to autism, specifically a decrease in social interest when compared to normal, non-exposed rats of the same age.
Right.
Here's what they said. They said, this is the first experimental study, to our knowledge, to demonstrate that aluminum adjuvants can impair social behavior if applied in the early period of postnatal development.
Right. Right. And so, you know, and aluminum has been linked with Alzheimer's and a few other mental issues, mental diseases that, you know, so why are we subjecting our children to this aluminum and having these problems? And ourselves. I mean, you know, I don't even like to have my food wrapped in aluminum. I don't like my food to touch aluminum anymore. I mean, I used to, right, before I knew any better, but now I know better and I don't even want it. I don't even really like having it in the house, but... you know, it is good. Like, if you got to wrap something up and take somewhere, I put parchment paper down, and then I put aluminum foil over it. So, yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, I'm more worried about the plastic on food than I am aluminum these days, because all the...
yeah.
That's been, you know, the studies
BPA
on that.
Stuff.
So there's another study from, let's see, where is it? Public Health Agency of Canada. And here's what they found. What they did is they looked at see if there was a connection between autism and vaccination. And lo and behold, what they found is that those provinces with the highest vaccination rates had corresponding higher autism rates.
Yep. That makes sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's kind of yeah. The guy, you know, there. Here's what cracks me up. When the first study I was talking about the aluminum, they said it's the first study of its kind. Why haven't they been looking at it when we've been they've been talking about it for years? Why isn't
right?
the American government looking into it? Why did the Canadian government have to do it?
That's what I want to know. Well, you know, I have my suspicions, but I don't want to. I don't want to go there. I don't want to be all conspiracy theory and say it's all about money.
Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
what I would say.
Yeah.
If I were going to say it.
You know, I wouldn't say it if I were you. I just wouldn't do it because, you know, the being branded a conspiracy theorist is probably, you know, pretty awful.
That's right. Yep.
Now, what else would you be branded if you said something like that? Because this is what they do
heretic.
All the time.
I swear,
they don't
I
like.
Swear.
Go for it.
I swear I'd be branded a heretic, right? Because it the religion of medicine out there with these vaccines, you don't want to go against it. You get, you know, strung up and stuff, burned at the stake or something.
Well, you're anti-science if you listen to these scientific articles that are studying it, and you agree with the study from the University of British Columbia, then you're anti-science if you espouse what they say.
That's right. That's got to be what it is. Nothing good ever came out of Canada, right?
I know. Anti-science, and you know, I don't know how many other names they can think of to call you if you tried to espouse some sort of conspiracy theory.
Exactly right.
So speaking of
conspiracy theories.
Yep. Speaking of science, here we go with another one. This one isn't a vaccine, but this study was published in Wilderness and Environmental Medicine. And it says, increased helmet use in alpine sports fails to reduce the risk of traumatic brain injury.
Yep. I can believe that.
Yeah, you know, it's, yeah, I kind of don't understand why they thought it would make a big difference. You know, I think it would help prevent fractures of the skull.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And contusions and lacerations, et cetera, but not brain injuries.
Right.
You know, we've speculated on that long ago, so it's only like we're just repeating ourselves when we say, oh, yeah, this stuff won't work. It's a contra coup type injury, and you know, the brain,
right,
it's kind of almost like jello. You shake it, and it cracks and tears internally. So,
right.
So what are they going to do with these sports? Because we've talked about this before, even just a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the one, I think it was lacrosse helmet use doesn't prevent brain
right?
Female lacrosse.
Well, it made it worse because they were out being meaner to each other.
Yeah, that's what it is. And then, so what happens is you wear a helmet if you're a skier or involved in alpine sports. So you probably take higher risks to get higher scores because you think you're safer, and you're really not.
Right. Scary stuff.
Yep, it is. Oh, here we go. Eating dinner in the mid-afternoon, then fasting, lowers blood pressure and boosts metabolism.
Nice.
So, you know,
we try to do that as often as we can.
Yeah, it just goes back to the way Grandma and Grandpa used to do things, right? They had supper, right, which was a big meal in their early afternoon. They'd have a small meal in the evening. Or if you were out doing something, you didn't eat dinner,
right?
You had a big, huge meal in the afternoon, and I mean it was a big meal, too. So, so there we go. Eat a bigger meal in the afternoon and skip dinner, and you'll lower your blood pressure and probably lose weight as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, right? Because you're going to increase your metabolism.
Yep.
So you're going to have to lose weight. It's almost mandatory.
So, Tufts University Health Sciences says this: quality of the diet is still poor for SNAP participants. SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. So, you know, I guess you could call the old food stamps, right? Well, they call them SNAP or whatever.
Right.
And anyway, this is published in the Journal of American Medical Association Network Open. And says that their diet is still poor. And you know what, Dr. Goforth, if you stand behind one of those people in the store and they pull out their Oregon Trail card.
Yep.
How much health
what they got on the belt.
Yeah, how much health food do you see there?
I rarely see anything of health there. Maybe once in a while I'll see a vegetable or a fruit. And fruit's really not that helpful, all that wonderful for us, right? But still, it's a lot better than some of the junk that I see most of the time. I even see my daughter do it, right? My oldest daughter was on that. I saw her buy candy with it and whatever else kind of junk. I was like, oh, it was terrible.
Yeah. Preclinical study finds that stevia is comparable to antibiotics in the treatment of Lyme disease. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. That is interesting. No, it was just stevia plant, not stevia extract, though, right?
Yeah, you know, it says researchers from the University of New Haven used an alcohol extract derived from stevia leaves, which is then administered to a biofilm of whatever borrelia that acts as a causative agent for Lyme disease. So they, it acts like antibiotic, which is pretty cool.
Right.
Because what else do you do for Lyme disease? Well, a lot of people don't realize they have it, right? They just got this horrible joint aches and pains, and they don't realize they have Lyme disease. Okay, here's another one on weight loss. It says daily fasting works for weight loss. Finds a report on the 16-8 diet. What's the 16-8 diet? Do you know what that is?
No, I don't. First I've heard of it.
Yeah, but again, okay, so I'm not going to go into all the details because I don't want to spend my time reading all the articles to find out where it is. But people are more into the fasting these days, you know, intermittent fasting, and we keep seeing study after study that does it. And part of my loss of 70 pounds when I dropped it was some intermittent fasting, short term, a couple, 3 days, and that was it. And it made a huge difference. And the thing is you know, I found that I do have the willpower to not eat for a day or two. It's really not a big deal. And I just didn't just not eat. I drink coffee. I just found that I was so busy doing other stuff, I just didn't eat. Wasn't really that hungry to do it. If I stayed away from watching TV late at night, I didn't want to eat a snack or anything. I'd actually go to bed and go to sleep a little bit earlier, and which also made me not want to snack at night. And I found it was actually quite easy compared to what I thought it would be.
Right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So here we go. A study published in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine showed that using Tylenol regularly can cause asthma and COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Right.
So, we've talked about this for the treatment of back pain. Since we're both chiropractors, we see a lot of back and neck pain, right?
Yeah, we
and
do.
So what we try to tell people is that the evidence-based medicine have pointed out what there is to do for the back pain. One of them is go to a doctor and let them look at you. Number two, stay active. We're supposed to tell you to stay active. Three, heat, and then spinal manipulative therapy or chiropractic adjustments. And that's the main thing. They have pharmaceutical options, which changed recently. They used to say Tylenol, ibuprofen, muscle relaxants, and opioids. But as you know, the opioids are killing 100 people a day, so they're under scrutiny. And newer meta-analysis says that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs cause more harm than good. Another meta-analysis said that acetaminophen or Tylenol is no better than placebo. But I'm going to tell you now, with a new study, we could probably say it causes more harm than good, right?
Right.
So if it causes asthma and COPD, then why are you bothering to use it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question.
Yep. Especially since there are alternatives. And here, this article points out some alternatives, which I thought was pretty good, because I use a lot of this myself. Capsaicin, like a capsaicin cream or something like that. They said some essential oils, which I don't use. Exercise, ginger, turmeric, valerian root, white willow bark. All of those I recommend all the time. So, And I'm not sure if I would like the white willow bark, because that might be considered a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, because it's what they get salicylic acid
or aspirin.
Yeah. Hey, taking over-the-counter pain medications right after exercise is a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, a study by researchers from Stanford University found that taking non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs could lead to kidney damage and may even reverse the benefits you could have gained from exercise.
Well,
it is estimated about 75% of runners use ibuprofen and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs before, during, and after their workout to ease muscle pain. Did you know that?
I did not know that. 75%
of them take that while they're working out.
That's a lot, and that's terrible. Why would you want to do that? I mean, I get you don't want to have the pain, but still, especially if you're going to lose any of the benefit that you might have gained from exercising in the first place.
So, I mean, honestly, Dr. G, what benefits can you possibly get from exercise that was causing you so much pain that you have to take drugs before, during, and after?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't want to exercise that way either.
I mean, I'm a former United States Marine, hoorah, right? And
right.
I do know that when they busted our butts getting us into shape, I do know that there was a lot of pain in the beginning, but your body, you know, a lot of that's just lactic acid and ammonia, right?
Right.
And so once all that wears off, you start getting a little bit better shape, then you don't have to worry so much because now you can work out and you're not hurting like that.
Right.
Unless you're continuing to get in better shape, but you do reach a point when it doesn't really hurt anymore to do it. So I just don't understand why so many people do so much crap to themselves, right?
Right.
So greater levels of vitamin D is associated with decreasing risk of breast cancer. Well, we saw that before, but here's another new one. So what I like pointing out to people is one of the studies that I had a long time ago when I first became real serious of vitamin D. I mean, we've been aware of it for a while, but I mean, when I really became hot on it and measuring everybody's, it's a number that I point to women at all the time because I have it memorized, is that if you get your blood level to 33, you get a 33% reduction in risk of breast cancer. They used to say 25 was all you needed, get blood level to 25, and that's just enough to prevent rickets or osteomalacia, right?
Right.
And so so people were not getting enough, and I tested them, they were always low. But what I also, now they change it, and so they say between 30 and 100 is normal. So I get a couple people come back and their blood levels are 30, and they say that's normal. And I'm going, so if you just get it up a little bit and you get a 33% reduction of breast cancer, do you think that's actually a good thing? And they go, yeah. Well, here's the good news. If you get it up to 50, 52 or 50, 53, you have an 83% reduction of risk of breast cancer. There, you remember, we've talked about it before. There's been a couple of doctors coming out there saying that vitamin D is basically a cure for breast cancer. But if you get your blood levels between 50 and 100, you're pretty much not going to get breast cancer.
Right.
This one says here, we found that participants with blood levels that were above 60 had one-fifth the risk of breast cancer compared to those with less than 20.
Nice.
So, yeah, to reach levels of 60, they needed the supplements of 4,000 to 6,000 units a day. So guess what I recommend?
5,000 a day, right?
Yep, that's it. So so I think we're right on there, Dr. G.
Yep, I think so.
I measure people's blood levels, and so I kind of know about how much to give them, right?
Right.
So now listen to this. Cut your risk of liver cancer in half by just increasing your vitamin D levels. This is published in the British Medical Journal today, and it says getting enough vitamin D can reduce your risk in general by 20%, or your cancer risk in general by 20%.
Nice.
So So, have you taken your vitamin D yet, Dr. G?
Not yet today.
Crack open that bottle right now.
I know I should. Where did I do with it? It's here on my desk.
There you go.
There it is.
It says vitamin status in newborns and risk of MS later in life. Here's what it says, American Academy of Neurology. Babies born with low levels of vitamin D may be more likely to develop MS later in life than babies with higher levels of vitamin D, according to this study. I got more on vitamin D. Want to hear more? Vitamin D eases mind and body. Study finds a daily dose can relieve the symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome and the accompanying anxiety.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Here's another one in there. It says, supplement your diet with vitamin D3 to have a healthier heart and cardiovascular system.
Go figure.
Yeah. They found that vitamin D3 was important in the stimulation of nitric oxide, which is an essential signaling molecule. I'm not going to go into more of the details, just because people are probably getting tired of hearing us talk about vitamin D, especially when I got another one right here.
Right.
Low vitamin D levels are associated with scarring lung disease.
Low vitamin D levels, yep.
Oh, by the way, I think I got another one. Here we go.
It's like it's good for
children
everything.
Children with celiac disease need to be regularly evaluated on their vitamin A and vitamin D levels because they have a tendency to be low. So anyway, I guess that's enough vitamin D for today. But, you know, that's the way it is when I'm looking through the studies.
Right.
Is we'll get a pocket of stuff where they'll have a lot of fish oil stuff or a lot of vitamin D or a lot of something. It's kind of interesting how it does that.
Right. And it is. It is interesting how it does it, too. But it's does every time, too, whether it be vitamin D or fish oil or probiotic, it all kind of groups together.
So, I'm going to say something blasphemous. Well, not really anymore, but it used to be. It says, a negative day reduces your risk of cardiovascular disease.
Yep. I love my eggs.
Yep. Researchers from the United Kingdom and China explored the links between egg consumption, ischemic heart disease, cardiovascular disease, stroke, and major coronary events. They examined data from more than 500,000 adults. And let's see, what did they find? Oh, basically, they found that an egg a day lowers your risk of all of those things.
Nice.
Those who ate up to one egg a day had 26% lower risk and experienced hemorrhagic stroke, as well as a 28% lower risk of dying from hemorrhagic stroke, 18% reduced risk of cardiovascular disease death. On top of that, they noted the daily egg consumers had a 12% lower risk of ischemic heart disease. So there you go.
That's good.
So all the cholesterol
like
height
it, right?
With all that, just height.
Yep. Cholesterol you eat, you know, it's going to be...
Hey, listen to this, Dr. G. This is actually fascinating. You're going to like this. This is researchers from the National Institute of Health, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. Here's what they found. Dermatologists are now treating eczema by spraying the skin with live bacteria.
Yep. By golly, that's what they needed to do, right?
Yeah, you know, and, you know, that bacteria out there must be beneficial for us because we got to put it in our guts, we got to put it on our skin, you know?
Yep, that's right. Go figure.
Yep, I know. I think it's pretty awesome.
I do, too. It is awesome.
Taking a probiotic drink. can prevent diarrhea. Well, you know, that's what I used to do to people that used to go to Mexico.
Right.
I used to tell them, you know, I'd give them, back in the early days when I was a brand new chiropractor, that's what I would do, is I'd give them probiotics in order to prevent traveler's diarrhea.
That's awesome.
What else? There's a link between gut bacteria and MS. So, hey, did you just notice something? MS and vitamin D and MS and probiotics. I wonder
right.
if there's a link between MS and fish oil. Oh, there is. So how about if people eat well, move well, think well, and supplement their paleo diet the way we recommend, maybe their risk of MS goes way, 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 way down.
Right. Call us crazy. That's the way it would go.
Okay, so University of Iowa Healthcare says researchers are now saying that bad gut bacteria or an insufficient amount of good bacteria may have a direct link to multiple sclerosis.
Yep, I can see that.
Yep, me too. Where we go? Oh, here we go. I have people that come to me with this condition. It says painful periods, taking vitamin B1 daily can help. 100 milligrams of vitamin B1.
Right. Sometimes just getting adjusted helps, too.
Yeah, it does. Let's see. Dark chocolate consumption reduces stress and inflammation.
I gotta like that.
Yeah, now speaking of dark chocolate consumption, my office lady, my office manager, is over here rating my dark chocolate.
Right?
She's just rating the dark chocolate. And then she looked at me and goes, It's anti-inflammatory.
That's right. Of course
it is. So, we decided to, because I'm telling people about my anti-inflammatory sort of mixture, that I'm tired of talking to people about it and explaining it, so we decided to put it on a business card to give to people, so that should be in the mail pretty soon. But we did some research, Dr. G. I'm looking, and I had a test kitchen set up where we put all these ingredients together, the test flavor and consistency and everything. So, a really good anti-inflammatory little shot in the morning is this: 2 teaspoons of fish oil. Now, you got to get high-quality fish oil. We can talk to people about that all they want. You know, there's bad fish oil out there. You don't even need the fish oil. You can use things like coconut oil. But fish oil by itself is anti-inflammatory. So, and if we have to take 2 teaspoons of fish oil a day anyway, why not put that in the drink, right? And then we add to them a teaspoon of turmeric, ground turmeric. I use organic turmeric because that's what I have available to me. And then 2 pinches of black pepper, a pinch of ground ginger, and a pinch of ground cinnamon. And I haven't added to it the dark chocolate because I put dark chocolate in my coffee anyway, so I don't really need to add it. But I wouldn't doubt if you could handle the thickness of it, if someone would just put some dark chocolate inside that concoction, it'd be a pretty potent anti-inflammatory mix. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep, I agree.
So, yeah. And see, dark chocolate affects human gene expression. Cacao regulates cellular immune response, neural signaling, and sensory perception. Anyway, there's all kinds of cool stuff in here that shows what dark chocolate does. It doesn't tell you in here the dosage of dark chocolate, and it says it needs to be about 70% or higher. The study expressed they did EEG response to consuming 48 grams of dark chocolate. And that's what worked, 48 grams. I don't know how much 48 grams is. Is that an ounce? I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
So loneliness can damage your health, triggering inflammation and neurological changes.
Loneliness, huh?
Loneliness. Yeah. I'm going to skip that one. I don't want to talk too much about it. Yoga and aquatic exercise can help combat MS symptoms. Of course, eating well, moving well, thinking well, right?
Right.
That's what we think. Oh, and guess what? I found some more vitamin D in here. Oh, my gosh. There's a whole bunch. Girls with high levels of vitamin D have stronger muscles.
Shocking. Is it because they're outside playing and stuff?
Yep.
Jeez. That's just amazing.
So they found the association with girls to have stronger muscles with higher levels of vitamin D, but they didn't find it with boys.
Right. Huh.
Well, but probably was right. You said because they're outside playing. Probably maybe not playing that much, but they're getting vitamin D. Whereas boys have a tendency to play and work their muscles
right.
more than girls have a tendency to. So boys may not need the extra vitamin D to be strong. But girls get a boost if they're not exercising that much. They just get stronger by having higher levels of vitamin D.
Right.
Okay, so here we go. Another one on vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency during pregnancy may increase the risk of MS in children. Yeah, so can coffee reduce your risk of MS? Yep, it can.
Oh, I hope so. All right, good. Yay! As long as it's black coffee, right? All the other crap we put in there kills us.
Okay, so here's what it says. Drinking a lot of coffee every day, or about six cups, is linked to a reduced risk of multiple sclerosis. Whoa, I'm reducing my risk today.
Me too. Especially
since one cup
is like equal to two.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, that's what it is. Isn't that funny?
Yep.
Is what we do now with our coffee. They used to be coffee cups, and now they're coffee mugs. And, you know,
right.
what I'm going to see one of these days is going to be like those 7-Eleven big gulps and the super
right.
big gulps. Oh, my God. I just can't believe seeing people carry around these big old things of soda pop. It's like, oh, my God. Well, maybe we'll do it with coffee.
I used to. I used to have like a big coffee thermal mug that could hold 32 ounces of coffee. Of course, I adulterated my coffee back then, too, so that was never that.
You mean you had 32 ounces of sugar flavored with coffee,
yep.
right?
That's correct. Back in the day.
Here's more on MS. For some reason, I got a bunch of stuff on MS again. Anyway, diet affects the progression of MS. So let's see. I'm going to skip that one. Study with implications for opioid crisis finds that opioids raise the risk of fracture, especially non-union fractures. So it looks like opioids kind of prevent the healing of bone.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
So what's the alternative?
Well, you know, well...
That's kind of where I've been. That's where my head's been at lately. I mean, I know that opioids are so bad for us, but what good painkiller do we have out there that's going to be effective for, you know, people who need to have some pain...
Well, here's what I'm going to assume. I'm going to assume that a single dose or two of a couple of opioids, because you just got a freshly broken bone, is probably okay. And then they reset your bone and then put you in a cast. But, you know, when I was a kid, you just remember all the – I never had a broken bone, but all the people I knew, including brothers and sisters with broken bones, they weren't taking opioids.
Right, right.
For the pain of their broken bones. You know, they weren't even given aspirin or ibuprofen, except for maybe like the right after they first broke it. So, but what we see now is we've seen this crisis of people. The doctors are just giving them out like candy. And
right.
here you go. Here's a prescription. Then people get addicted, and they go in and they take it. So I'm thinking more of the people that take a much higher dose, and it doesn't allow them to heal correctly. And what's the alternative? Maybe cannabinoids.
Oh, there is that, yeah. Huh, that might work.
You know what I mean? There is, yeah. There is a... Didn't the, I think the Food and Drug Administration just recently, and I don't have the study in front of me, but I saw it the other day, recently approved the use of, I don't know if it was THC or cannabinoid or just plain marijuana for the use of something. So maybe that's what maybe that's what people need to do.
Right.
So, folate, a common B vitamin, can prevent and even reverse age-related hearing loss.
What? Sorry, I had to. I couldn't help it. What?
Yeah, so I found that pretty interesting because, you know, we want to give folic acid to people or folate to prevent neurotube defects during pregnancy. So we know
right. That...
people are low in the B vitamin because of that. And so
right. Also,
you know, people have high homocysteine levels because they have low vitamin Bs. And high homocysteine levels are related to cardiovascular problems. So I'm wondering if all the deficiencies we're seeing is that we're beginning to see damn near everything is deficient these days.
Right.
Because our diet is so poor. I mean, think about it. I mean, we discovered long ago, and this is what cracks me up, Dr. Goforth, is that our ancestors in medicine and the government were far brighter than what we are, and it wasn't that long ago. What, you know what I mean? Like when they discovered
right. That
people were in mental institutions and having all kinds of problems, and they added B vitamins to their food, and all of a sudden, their mental problems went away. Their skin problems went away.
Right.
Their depression went away. And then they had, they discovered that we had a lot of goiters across the nation. And so they put iodine in salt so we could get rid of all the goiters. And you don't see anybody with goiters anymore. And then they put vitamin D2 in milk because of all the softening of the bones out there, right? And so... They discovered that, but now they, when's the last time they fortified anything, even though we now know that our diet is even crappier than it was back then?
I don't know if they've had any kind of fortification of anything lately.
Yeah, so what's the problem? Why haven't they changed things? Because we're discovering it. Why isn't folic acid in enough of it in food to help prevent neural tube defects so we don't have to give it to pregnant women?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because
back in the day when they added it, they named all of the vitamins. Like folate was vitamin B9, right? And so
right. Niacin,
riboflavin, you know, all the other ones that they put in, pantothenic acid, they named them. And then they quit naming them because they kept finding more and more and more. Well, how come all of those other ones aren't like a B-complex vitamin put in flour?
Right.
You know, so I just don't understand why we haven't made those requirements anymore. And what was it about the political environment, about the healthcare environment, and who was it that got all of those things added to our food supply because of deficiencies? And where the hell are they now?
Right. I'm sure they got bought out or something. Oh, darn it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird.
Conspiracy theory again. Yeah.
So, Japanese study concludes that taking both EPA and DHA improves exercise performance.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I know. So, we're a little bit more than halfway through the show. So, what I wanted to do, because we have a new radio station on board with us, KXCR 96.7 in Florence, I want to welcome those people to our show. It's a little different format than we're used to, because now we're acknowledging other radio stations, which is kind of cool.
It's very cool.
So, Dr. G, vaccinated children are more likely to develop obsessive compulsive disorder and other anxiety disorders. So the researchers from Yale School of Medicine and Penn State School of Medicine teamed up to examine the effects of vaccination on mental health of children. In epidemiological analysis, the scientists concluded that there's a link between immunization, neuropsychiatry, and changes in of developing a disorder or chances of developing a disorder of OCD and anorexia nervosa and other anxiety problems. So anyway, so it looks like the science is starting to become overwhelming on damning vaccination.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. It's it's all political stuff, right?
Right. Exactly right.
Like you were saying earlier, you dare not say anything about it because then you're branded some sort of name.
Yep, right.
And the environment we live in now is the worst, I think. Well, I'm not that old, but it's the worst I've ever seen. And that's what I was alluding to, is how did they get the vitamin D, the B vitamins, and the iodine and salt and stuff? How do they get all that in there? Whereas today, we can't even talk about that stuff practically. The environment is so harsh out there that you're branded anti-scientific for even bringing up a study that's a scientific study.
Right.
So how do we get our common sense back, and how do we get some political discourse and some discussion out there of what is good and not good? Right. That vaccine.
Right.
Cause if the aluminum in vaccine.
You can't just go around smacking people, can you?
No, I know. Sometimes you wish you could, right?
Sometimes you wish you could.
You know, that's my old Marine Corps training. Smack them first. And
right.
After they pick themselves up on the floor, then you can have a discussion.
That's right.
Yeah. So, taking probiotics can reduce the symptoms of depression.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, what's this? This is a study out of McMaster University in Canada. Cool. A compound found in green tea dissolves dangerous plaques found in blood vessels. Well, that's actually fascinating to me, Dr. G. I was wondering what people could do as their arteries and blood vessels start hardening up and doing it. I never knew what to do except for maybe sending people to have chelation therapy or something like that, right? But now, getting them to drink, getting them to drink green tea can make a huge difference in dissolving those plaques up. So, because you know as well as I do, right? When if you take X-rays. And here's the truth, man, when it comes to X-rays, is we're not as good as we used to be, because we used to take X-rays, chiropractors, even medical clinics. They take them, they throw the X-rays up on the light bulb and look at them, and you can see incidental findings. You can see, I can see some hardening in your arteries, a hardening in your aorta, all this other stuff, and we used to see them. And now, because most people send out for X-rays, they go their digital X-rays, and they're harder to bring up on a computer and look at, and they're smaller, so you don't necessarily blow them up and look at them. They're not looked at as often as they used to be. And then because they're not looked at as often as they used to be, people are not pointing out to them that there's incidental findings like plaquing. So when I actually do look at an X-ray, which is not as often as I used to, and I see that, now I got something to tell someone. Hey, look, your arteries are hardening up. Maybe you want to start consuming a bunch of green tea.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going down the path of high blood pressure and all the consequences associated.
Right.
A shocking study shocking. This is shocking.
I'm sitting down.
Canola oil is not healthy, and it could lead to diminished memory.
Are you telling me a canola oil is not healthy anymore?
Yeah, you know, and I was in the store this weekend looking for some oil. I normally use olive oil, but I wanted to cook something different, so I was looking for some healthier oils. It wasn't expensive as olive oil. And it's been so long since I looked, I was shocked how much canola oil there is.
Right.
That's almost
a lot.
Yeah, I was looking for something like safflower oil or something like that.
Right.
I could not find any store. All I could find was canola oil and soybean oil.
Right.
Oh, and there was some oil, but there was some corn oil I found. But most of it was.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and here's the funny part, is the Canola Oil Council of Canada says that canola oil is the healthiest of all cooking oils.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that's propaganda, right?
Yep, right.
Okay, so the powerful neuroprotective properties of curcurum, which is turmeric, right?
Ever
revealed in a scientific study, it says stunning 30% improvement in memory.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's one of those why I like so much of that new concoction that I've been putting together for patients, the anti-inflammatory concoction, because it's not just anti-inflammatory, it's anti-cancer. And then guess what? It's also pro-memory.
Right.
So, you know, that's the funny part, because I was talking to my son, the food scientist, about that very issue of all that stuff, and it's kind of funny. We got a lot. You like how I do that, right? My son,
I do
the
every
food
time.
Scientist.
The food scientist. My son, the food scientist.
No, I know. I do that on purpose now because I think it's funny when I say that. The food scientist.
My son,
if he listened
scientist.
To me on a regular basis, he'd go, "Dad, will you shut up about that?"
Yeah, right. He probably would, huh?
I know.
Yeah, I know he listens, so does he tell you that all the time, right?
No, he doesn't tell me that all the time, but because probably he doesn't listen to when I actually say it. He probably listens to the other shows. But anyway,
yeah,
we were talking about that thing of how, you know, most people, and I shouldn't say most people, but lots of people take a multiple vitamin. Now, they're crappy multiple vitamins, but I think a lot of people, even if they're not taking it, kind of understands the importance of a multiple vitamin. But the reality is the multiple vitamin isn't even close to being as healthy as some of these other things that we probably need to do. You know what I mean? Is even if we eat healthy to get rid of the multivitamins, we're not getting enough turmeric in our diet. We're not getting enough fish oil in our diet. We're not getting enough vitamin D because we don't add that to that's not part of our regular foods. Obviously, the vitamin D comes from sun, and the fish oil comes from eating fish. And so there's probably, like that little anti-inflammatory concoction I got, is probably a huge benefit for a whole lot of people. Now, I cook Indian food all the time. I'm constantly cooking with a lot of turmeric and ginger and garlic and onions and stuff like that. So to me, that a lot of that stuff is just part of my diet. But most of my patients don't do that.
Right.
So I would rather them do something like the more anti-inflammatory. I mean, look at that. When's the last time you could say a multiple vitamin improved your memory? In a scientific study.
I can't remember. Yep.
Exactly, right?
Right.
So probably need to rethink the way we do multiples and reformulate them into something a little bit more useful for people. But, you know, again, they made the multiples into gummies, so they're all full of sugar and, you know, there's not hardly any vitamins in them. So, you know.
Right.
Okay, so here's another one on vaccines. This is funny, Dr. G. I've got a lot on vaccines all of a sudden. Well, we didn't do the radio show last week, and we had a problem a couple of weeks ago, so I guess it's not too unusual for them to be stacking up. It says explosive research. Instead of shocking, it says explosive research. It says the chickenpox vaccine is linked to widespread increase in shingles.
Oh. That's, I got to tell you, that makes me laugh only because when my youngest daughter, we had her over seeing a pediatrician a few times, doing checkups and stuff like that, and we did a few of the vaccines, not many. And the pediatrician's looking at me going, so you should do the chickenpox vaccine. Why? Chickenpox isn't going to hurt her. I mean, it's, oh, no, a shingles. It's to prevent shingles. Because shingles hurt. I have a lot of elderly patients. Because he wasn't really a pediatrician. He was more of a general practitioner, right? And he said, I have older patients who just, when they come in with shingles, it's really painful. I said, yeah, but, it's okay. Because it's more protective to have chickenpox than it is to not have it. And so we had this discussion, whatever. Longer story shorter, is that she wound up not getting it. But now we have this. And so I was right. Look at me go. Yeah. Woohoo!
You're right. Here's what it says. There might be fewer cases of chickenpox now because of the vaccine, but what we're seeing is a lot more of its related and more serious problems, herpes zoster or shingles.
Yep. Right.
So we get rid of something relatively mild, and we replace it with something a lot more serious.
Yep. Boy, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's what I think. We ought to pat ourselves on the back because we have a lot less chickenpox now than we ever had before.
Right.
But we also have a hell of a lot more shingles. And I'm telling you, when you see people, patients that come in to see me with shingles, they could be in a world of hurt because it could come in their eye, it could come on their face, and last for weeks. I've had people come in, with back pain, right? Excruciating back pain. And you can't see anything wrong. And I send them to the doctor, go, I don't understand this. And doctor goes, oh, this is shingles. And because it could hurt bad before they get the outbreak that you can obviously see, right? And they are in excruciating pain. And sometimes, I had one guy, he had shingles in his hair, on his head, for like 3 or 4 years, so we had to put together a formulation for him of mushroom extracts and a couple of other things in order to get rid of it, because he couldn't get rid of it, and it got rid of it in about 3 weeks after we did that. And I've used that formulation a few times on a few people with bad shingles, and it works every time. But I just don't get that many people to come to see me with shingles. They usually are just good chiropractic patients, and they're coming in, and they go, hey, what can you do for this?
Right.
Here we go. University of Nevada, Las Vegas. It says, what a pain. iPad neck plagues women more. Now they're calling it iPad neck. The chiropractors
yep.
used to call it text neck, and now they're
right.
calling it iPad neck or tablet neck. Women are 2.059 times more likely to experience musculoskeletal symptoms during iPad use than men. So, yeah. Well, maybe we'll start seeing a lot more of these people coming into their clinic,
Right.
Maybe that's some of the questions we should ask them. What increases your, we always say, what makes it worse, what makes it better? Maybe we should get a little leading question. Is it worse when you're using your iPad or iPhone or whatever?
Right.
Because maybe it would be a little bit worse when they do that. I don't know. What else do I got here? Oh, you having trouble sleeping, Dr. G?
Oh, yeah.
Could be low magnesium or magnesium deficiency. Yeah, that's one of those things. You and I, when we went to the seminars, and especially the ones with Dr. Murphy, right? He
right.
likes to recommend magnesium to everybody. and he's got a good reason to. And, you know, I've read this is the second leading deficiency in the United States, and I've taken it myself these days because of associated problems. And I'm starting to recommend it and to more and more of my patients because I'm starting to see a lot of people with magnesium deficiency.
Right.
And, you know, and I don't have a very good solution for helping people with sleep disorder. You know, I just, you know, do the melatonin thing and I can turn all the lights off, but, you know, a lot of people have a real hard time sleeping. So maybe just, oh, you're having a poor time sleeping? Try some magnesium and see if that'll help.
Right. Yep, that may work.
Huh. What am I looking at? Seems like I might have read these before, this pile of stuff on my desk. I'm going to pass that up and go to another one. Here we go. No, that's a political one. I don't want to get into politics too much here. Coffee and tea can keep your heart healthy, but only if you drink it in moderation.
Ah. Moderation. Darn.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what moderation is. We keep seeing that it's only effective. I've seen studies at 4 or 5 cups. Now we saw one for MS at 6 cups.
Right.
You know, you kind of wonder.
Yep.
Oh, here you go. This one's a really good one. I like this study. Taking whey protein 30 minutes before one's largest meal improves the blood pressure of overweight or obese men. Well, okay, so there's a couple of things. I don't necessarily believe it's just the whey protein. I really believe that people are more and more protein deficient these days because we eat too much carbs, right?
Right.
So I know that you could lose weight if you eat 30 grams of protein 30 minutes to an hour after you wake up in the morning. I've demonstrated on patients, myself, my staff, everybody. It works really well. And we've used whey protein before, even though I don't like whey or dairy products. But if you want to lose weight, I don't have no problem with trying that temporarily. So I bet it's just the protein that they get because they're not getting enough protein with the meals that they eat.
Right.
I mean, because they're just loaded with carbs, you know. They say meat and potatoes. It should be called potatoes and meat. Potatoes and bread and maybe a little bit of meat.
Right, that's it too. I've seen a lot of people that way.
Yeah, I know, way too many people that way. So, yeah, and I don't think we get enough protein for the most part. I think that that's one of the things why we take fish oil is because we just don't eat enough fish these days.
Right.
Not enough people eat enough fish. So, I think we read this one before. It says teens should run a mile every day to prevent depression.
Right. We did.
Well, guess what? We're getting close to the end of the show right now, so
yeah,
I think we need to get ready to call this quits. So, I want to welcome our listeners from KXCR 96.7 here in Florence for listening to our show, and I guess that concludes today's show. So until next time, here's to your health.